And I think Honorable Bartlett, I miss you. And Keto, I just mentioned you. I think our members will be sufficient to continue with this meeting. Honorable Minister has joined us. Welcome to the Minister. From the IEP, we have the Commissioners, Glenn Mashinini, and I see Kenneth Love is with us as well. The CEO of the IEP. I think an advocate, Tlakula, should be present as well. I'm not sure, is she present?
Yes, sir.
Okay, great. Great, no, okay. I think it's like 1 minute past 10, so perhaps we should start with our meeting. Let me welcome honorable members of the committee. Minister, thank you for being present as well. From the IEP, the commissioners that are present, and the CEO and all other staff members. From the information regulator, we have Mayor Advocate Tlakula. I think in our list, we also have the parliamentary legal advisors, as well as the state law advisor, who is present as well. But welcome, everybody. Our members, you'll recall that on the 8th of December last year, we received a briefing by the IEC on the electoral laws amending bill. We then also hosted a meeting last week on the 10th of February, in which we decided that we should give the officials more time to consolidate the responses to the submissions received on the ball, but also to give members more time to look at this information, so that in terms of today's deliberations, we would be able to deliberate it in a much more informed way. Subsequent to our meeting in December, we advertised the electoral laws amendment bill for public comment from the 14th to the 29th of January 2021 in national and regional newspapers. In response to these adverts, we received at least 5 substantive public comments or submissions, as well as about 1,550 submissions on the Dear South Africa website. From that website, these submissions largely indicated whether they were not in favor or not fully in favor of the bill, and a lot of the comments were not necessarily substantiated. But just in terms of today's proceedings, we'll get the IEC then to provide the responses to the substantive submissions. These documents, on members, were distributed to you for your consideration as well. I think thereafter, after the IEC makes that presentation, we'll also allow the information regulator to address the committee as well. And this is also in light of the fact that we part of the, well, in terms of the electoral laws amendment bill, part of it also deals with aligning the electoral act with the provisions of the personal with the provisions of the Protection of Personal Information Act. And then a minister, if you would also perhaps, if you wish to also add, you would be allowed to do that. And following that, honorable members will then deliberate on all the submissions. I would first like to then invite the IEC to provide the committee with a briefing on their responses. Commissioner Mashinini, if I can hand over to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm not sure about this presentation that's coming up.
Just hold on a second. I'm so surprised. Zolani, who is controlling the screen and who's sharing the screen? Okay.
Thank you.
All right, no.
Not yet. Mr. Shiburi will share the screen. I'm just making opening remarks.
Okay, I don't think Mr. Shiburi has got the hosting powers, but Zulani, yes. If you could share in for now.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson, Honorable Sheikh, Minister of Home Affairs, Dr. Mzwaledi, the Deputy Minister of Home Affairs, Mr. Nzuza, the Information Regulator, Advocate Tlakula, Honorable Members of the Select Committee, thank you for the opportunity to once again appear before this Honorable Committee and to engage on the Electoral Laws Amendment Bill as already introduced by the Chairperson. Madam Chair, allow me to briefly introduce the members of the Commission present today. I am joined by my fellow Commissioners, the Vice Chairperson, Ma'am Love, Commissioner Mayepia, and Commissioner Dr. Masugu. And from the administration, I'm also accompanied by our Chief Electoral Officer, Mr. Mamabulo, together with the Deputy Chief Electoral Officer for Electoral Operations, Mr. Shiburi, as well as the Chief Executive of Political Party Funding, Mr. Masangu, and the Deputy Chief Electoral Officer for Outreach, Mr. Mosri, and Senior Manager for Legal Services, Ms. Rath, and our Commission Services Officer, Mr. Kilemba, and our Communication Chief, Mr. Granelli. Honorable Members, indeed, we as the Commission have made the preparation to the responses of the public submissions that you have received. And Honorable Members, Section 5 of the Electoral Commission Act 73 of 1998 mandates the Commission to, I quote, continuously review electoral legislation and propose electoral legislation and make recommendations in connection therewith, of quote. Therefore, the Electoral Laws Amendment Bill is directly in line with this particular mandate, which we exercise periodically and timing it that it must be completed before going into the next round of every election, whether it is provincial and national elections or it is local government elections. And therefore, all what we do is the timetable is driven by the provisions of the Constitution and the Act. Now, in terms of the submission that we are presenting to yourselves, is that the amendments that are before you, they contain important enhancements that the electoral to the electoral process aimed at achieving three key outcomes. The first for us is to streamline the electoral process to make it easier for parties and candidates to meet their obligations. Secondly, it is to clarify the voting process for voters whose addresses do not appear on the voter's roll so that they are not disenfranchised in the upcoming elections. And thirdly, and most importantly for us, is that we embarked on a very critical process, which was to bring the various pieces of electoral legislation into line with the Protection of Personal Information Act of 2013. Honorable Members, we also have a further requirement of this same section of the Electoral Commission Act is for the Commission to, I quote, to promote cooperation with and between persons, institutions, governments, and administrations for the achievement of its objectives, of quote. Therefore, in this regard, the Commission wishes to acknowledge and to thank all those who took the time to make submissions on the Electoral Laws Amendment Bill throughout the drafting and the parliamentary approval process. These submissions have helped to ensure the process has been inclusive, accessible, transparent, and well considered. Allow me also to take this opportunity and to clarify that any unintended impression that the Commission sought to circumvent parliamentary process by engaging directly with some of the stakeholders who made submissions during this latest phase. The Commission consulted and engaged and interacted with a range of stakeholders throughout the process of drafting and finalizing these amendments as per the mandate. And noting that the draft amendments remain a work in progress until finalized at the time, and the time constraints that facing all of us ahead of the local government election, the Commission did sought to facilitate the reaching of consensus through a bilateral dialogue. The intention was to achieve a meeting of minds between the information regulator on the one hand and Amabungane on the other prior to finalizing our appearance before this committee. We are encouraged that through this process, we are able to table some revised drafting of Section 16 for consideration to the Honorable Committee. And we hope that our eagerness to find a workable solution does not in any way undermine the committee's processes. And regarding the inputs that were made by Amabungane, the Commission would also like to acknowledge that Amabungane did make a submission during the public consultation phase in the National Assembly. Unfortunately, that contribution was not submitted in time, and the Commission was under tremendous pressure to make up for the time lost due to COVID lockdown and still meet the constitutionally prescribed timeframe as indicated earlier on. The finalization of these amendments for us as the Commission remain a key factor in our preparation for the next coming elections, which elections are just six months away from now. Having had the time to consider the Amabungane submission again, the Commission resolved to reconsider the amendment in order to find an amicable balance accommodating all the stakeholders. So the Commission searched for what we regard could be a win-win solution. And this is therefore resulted in the revised draft, which our Deputy Chief Electoral Officer will shortly expand on. Honorable Chair, in conclusion, the Commission wishes to express its gratitude to you and the members of the Select Committee for your work in expediting this matter despite the festive season break and a very busy schedule on the ongoing challenges posed by the COVID-19 pandemic. And we look forward to continue to work closely with the committee and the NCOP in this process in the future. With these brief notes, allow me then to request our Deputy Chief Electoral Officer, Mr. Shiburi, to take the committee through the Commission's responses to all the submissions that have been received. I thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Mr. Shiburi, Zalani, I think you're going to have to share the screen.
I've given him the right share. He's able to share from his side.
Great.
Good morning, Chair, members of the committee and the Minister. As the Chair has indicated, there are about five broad categories into which the submissions and public comments can be categorized. The first, which relate to the substantive submissions, relate to access to the voter's roll and the details of voters contained therein. These submissions implicate Clause 8 of the Bill and Section 16 of the Electoral Act. The second broad theme of categories are those that are concerned with the ability of voters to vote in voting districts in which they are not registered. And these submissions relate to Clause 9 of the Bill and Section 24, Capital A of the Electoral Act. The third theme can best be described as submissions or comments directed at a choice of electoral system for the country. These are outside the remit and scope of the current bills, and therefore, in our response, we have not linked them to any specific clause, nor have we related them to any specific provision of the bill. The fourth category of submissions are those that are concerned with the varied voting method for voters who appear on the voter's roll, but for whom the Electoral Commission still does not have an address. And these implicate Clause 20 of the bill and are related to Section 47 of the Municipal Electoral Act. The last category of voters are those that are concerned with the amendments that were effecting in Section 50 of the Electoral Act, and those are to be found in Clause 14 of the bill. As is common course, the bill implicates three pieces of legislation: the Commissions Act, the Electoral Act, as well as the Municipal Electoral Act. I now deal with each of the submissions as received in 10. And the first one, which is now on the first screen, relates to Clause 8 of the Electoral Act. And the submission is from Amabungani. They have two submissions. The first relates to Section 16.2. And the summary of the submission by Amabungani is that the deletion of Section 16.2 from the bill would serve to limit the ability of journalists and other interested stakeholders, be they academics or community journalists, from obtaining copies of the voter's roll. And that would make the work of scrutinizing the voter's roll to check for irregularities very difficult for those class of professionals and citizens. In our response, we are proposing a redraft of Section 16.2, having also benefited from the insight and wisdom of the information regulator. The purpose of removing Section 16.2 from the bill was to safeguard the personal information of voters by limiting access to the voter's roll and not allowing everyone or every person unfettered access to the voter's roll. So the redraft that we're sponsoring seeks to do two things. On the one hand, it seeks to safeguard access to the voter's roll, a right which is accepted by Amabungani, and on the other hand, to balance it with the right for the protection of personal information, a right which is protected under the Constitution in terms of the rights to privacy. We are now redrafting Section 16.2 to reinstate it in the bill and draft and seek to find that balance between access in a manner that does not disclose unnecessarily the personal information of voters. In this regard, we propose the following redraft for consideration by the committee and beg leave of the committee to consider this and accept it as a draft that best traverses the tightrope between access and protection of personal information. So the first draft is as follows. Section 16.2 will now read as follows. The chief electoral officer must provide a certified copy of or extract from a segment of the voter's roll as it exists at that time to any person who has paid the prescribed fee if the chief electoral officer is satisfied that, and those are the new things that we included. The text underlined are the new inclusions. If the chief electoral officer is satisfied that it is required by such person for the purposes of monitoring the accuracy of the information in the voter's roll, 2, for statistical or research purposes, 3, any other purpose that is prescribed, and the new inclusion under 16 is 16B, and that doing so could not involve unlawful processing personal information in terms of POPIA. To close 16.2, we introduce another new 16.2 capital A, which makes it an offense for someone who to use an extract of the voter's roll for purposes other than that which is not prescribed in section 16.2. So in short, we are reinstating section 16, but redrafting it to make the voter's roll or segments thereof available for specific and predetermined purposes, and which makes it subject to the requirements of POPIA as it relates to the safeguard of the personal information of voters. So that is the redraft as it relates to section 16.2. The second redraft proposed, again under the same clause 8, relates to section 16.5, which is a new inclusion. Again here, Amabungani had raised an issue that in its current form, the new section 15A was too wide and afforded the chief electoral officer overly broad discretion on the nature of personal information that must be redacted from the voter's roll. Again here, we are proposing a redraft to section 16.5 to make it clear that the Electoral Commission does not desire an unfettered discretion as it relates to the nature of information to be redacted on the voter's roll. So we are proposing the following rephrasing. The new 16.5 will read as follows. The chief electoral officer must, and we're using peremptory terms, must redact the identity number of voters, excluding the 6 digits indicating the voter's date of birth appearing on the voter's roll provided in terms of subsection 2 or 3, save where the requester satisfies the chief electoral officer that A, exceptional circumstances require the full identity number to be disclosed, and B, doing so could not involve unlawful processing personal information in terms of the Protection of Personal Information Act. What this new redraft makes clear is that the default provision is that we will redact the identity number excluding the first 6 digits that indicate a voter's date of birth. That is the default situation. And that it is peremptory, it is a provision of the law. The chief electoral officer holds no discretion. The reduction is at the instance of parliament and not the chief electoral officer. We're also introducing a very narrow exception to the rule that the remainder of the ID digits will be redacted. There may be instances where providing a voter's roll redacted may not serve lawful purposes. For an example, if a party or a person wishes to object to the inclusion or exclusion of a specific person from a segment of the voters' roll, in circumstances where there are multiple persons who share a first name and a second name on the segment of the voters' roll, it may not be easy to distinguish which person against whom a objection is made if more digits of the vote of the ID number are not made available. So in exceptional circumstances and on an argument made out that exceptional circumstances exist for the inclusion or for the disclosure of more digits that is provided for under Section 16.5, the Chief Electoral Officer may disclose additional digits of the voter's roll. But again, this is under narrow and pre-described exceptions in the law. The redraft of Section 16 follows the public participation process and submissions made by Amabungane and the consideration by the Electoral Commission, including the consideration of the submission that was made by the information regulator. In the view of the Commission, the redraft which is sponsored traverses that tightrope between guaranteeing access to information as well as safeguarding the privacy of voters by securing their personal information. The third submission was received from an individual, Mr. J.P. Wolfharter. The submission asserts that the present electoral law is along racial lines and therefore is a risk to ethnic and racial minorities. In the circumstance, the submission advocates for an electoral law which facilitates contestations along first language spoken by voters and citizens, and thereby jettisoning political parties as platforms for representation. In other words, elections should be administered along language preferences as a platform for contestation and not using political parties as vehicles for citizens to assert their Section 19 constitutional rights. The response of the Commission is that the submission appears to be concerned with the choice and design of an electoral system. And to that end, we state the obvious that there is a separate parliamentary process to review the electoral system for national and provincial elections. For that reason, there is no specific response to this submission because it falls outside the province of the bill as it currently stands. The next submissions were received from the 70s Group and the Patriotic Movement SA. Again, the two organizations call for amendments to be effected to the Electoral Act to align it to the judgment of the Constitutional Court, which was handed down in June 2020. The groups go on to make specific recommendations for a particular electoral system. The response of the Commission, again, is that the current bill, does not address the findings of the Constitutional Court handed down in June 2020 in the New Nation Movement. We repeat again that there is a separate parliamentary process to derive electoral scheme for the country. But we clarify that judgment of the Constitutional Court in June 2020 did not impact or implicate the electoral system in the municipal sphere. And therefore, the electoral system in the municipal sphere remains competent because it was not a subject of, nor was it impacted by the court judgment in the new nation matter. The next substantive submission, Chair, on which we are proposing a redraft relates to clause 20 and it impacts on section 47 of the Municipal Electoral Act. The submission is at the instance of the City of Cape Town Municipality. The city supports the bill. They only take issue with the style of drafting in clause 20. In the view of the city, the original drafting would have amounted to an impermissible delegation of legislative powers by enabling the Electoral Commission to determine a different voting procedure for voters without an address. We do not take issue with the submission, Chair, and for that reason, we are proposing a redraft that makes it clear that the different voting procedure for voters without an address is still subject to the safeguard, is still subject to the procedure determined by the legislature in section 47. So the response of the Commission is as follows. The amendment to section 47 of the Municipal Electoral Act brings the Act in line with section 38(8) of the Electoral Act in order to create consistency on how voters without addresses on the voter's roll cast ballots on voting day. The salient principles underpinning this amendment are as follows. The first, we want to make it clear that a voter without an address on the voter's roll still enjoys their political rights to shape affairs of their country. So they cannot be disenfranchised because they do not have an address on the voter's roll. What we're making it clear in a different voting procedure is that over and above the other processes that are already provisions provided for under section 47, a voter without an address, over and above meeting those other obligations, must first supply their address to a voting official before they are issued the requisite number of ballot papers. Thirdly, that the address so supplied by the voter must locate within the ward in which the voter intends to vote. If a voter is registered in Ward 1, but however provides an address that locates them outside of that ward, that voter will not be handed the provincial, the ward ballot. Because we know from Mhlophe and others that the Concord said the import of an address on the voter's roll is to make sure that only persons who are ordinarily residents in those wards are permitted to participate in those ward elections. The fourth point is that agents present at the voting station may object to a voter who provides an address being permitted to vote in that ward. So the redrafting makes it clear that the method is already prescribed in section 47 and that a different method will still be subject to that method. In the circumstance, the new rephrased section 47(7) would read as follows. The Commission may prescribe a different voting procedure and the underlined new inclusion, which must accord with the provisions of these sections. And the provisions of these sections are the following. One, that a voter may only vote at the voting station at which they are registered. They can only vote once in an election. They must produce an identity document, and the description of that of the person in the identity document must be that of the voter or the person presenting that identity document. And if the person's name appears on that segment of the voter's roll, so only persons whose names appear on the segment of the voter's roll who provide an ID document, who present themselves at their voting station, will be permitted to vote in a different, by via a valid voting method. And that once those safeguards have been passed, the voter will be handed the requisite number of ballot papers, their hand will be marked to indicate that they voted, and their name will be scratched off that voter's roll to indicate that they have already voted in that election. So Section 47.7 intends to safeguard the continued franchise of voters who, for reasons not of their making, still do not have an address on the voter's roll. The next submission relates to clause 14 and impacts section 51 of the Electoral Act. In the bill, we are removing the ballot paper reconciliation statement from the Act, and we want to deal with it by way of regulation. We are not saying we are dispensing with the requirements for the reconciliation of ballots issued and used at the station, but we want to make it easier to rationalize some of those processes which have been implicated and impacted upon by the amendments in the law over successive number of electoral amendments. So the response of the Commission is that the amendment provides for the form to be regulated instead of being of it being in the main act. This is intended to allow flexibility in accommodating any additional requirements for rationalization of the information on the form. For an example, the introduction of Section 38.8, Section 41.1 capital A, as well as amendments to Regulation 18A and 19.4 of the electoral regulations have had an impact on the form that must be completed in terms of Section 50. So by making it available and prescribing it in the regulation, it makes it easy for the Commission to keep up with the pace of development and to amend the form so that it remains useful as one of the many safeguards for the integrity of the elections. And by us regulating it, we can then more readily respond. For example, the provisions that I've mentioned now have combined to introduce new categories of disputed votes that are not finalized at the voting station, and these are not accommodated in that form. The only way to change that form would be to ask for a legislative amendment, whereas if you regulate it in the regulations, the Commission can regulate, can deal with it much more efficiently by way of amending the regulations. Just to underscore, the proposed change does not want to limit the information that must be recorded on the form. The intention is to retain the requirements for the counting officer to account for the ballot papers at that voting station. The change is just to regulate the form to enable flexibility to respond to new and emerging requirements without watering down the reconciliation requirement. The majority of the submissions received were related to this clause, clause 9, and clause 9 deals with section 29A of the Electoral Act. At high level, these submissions are from persons who do not support the bill because in their mistaken understanding, there is a perception that the bill seeks to enable persons to vote in voting districts in which they are not registered. And that if this were to be permitted, this would introduce and facilitate voter fraud and enable busing in of voters and create opportunity for unregistered persons to vote in elections. The next submission is that persons should not be permitted to to influence the outcome of elections in areas in which they are not registered and or they are not ordinarily resident. As will be demonstrated by the response from the Electoral Commission, the amendment seeks to do the opposite of what the submissions perceive the amendments to do. The response of the Commission is as follows. Amendments to Section 24A of the Electoral Act are intended to ensure that existing safeguards for the continued trials of voters who unavoidably find themselves outside the voting district in which they are registered on voting day during national and provincial elections is adjusted. The amendment is introduced to control the existing practice so that we continue to safeguard the credibility of elections by requiring that voting using Section 24A should be by prior notice to the CEO. By way of background, Section 24A capital A has its genesis in our law from an observation where in national and provincial election, and that is the key phrase, the Section 24A only finds application in national and provincial elections. There is no equivalent provision in municipal or by-elections. So Section 24A was introduced to facilitate the continued franchise of citizens who found themselves unavoidably on voting day outside the areas of their ordinary residence and at which they were registered. For an example, a truck driver who on election day finds themselves in the Free State when they are registered in Limpopo. They can't go back to Limpopo to cast their vote. And if no accommodation was made, those voters would have forfeited their right to participate and shape affairs of their country. So Section 24, capital A, made an exception to the requirement that the voter registers and votes where they are ordinary resident, to allow for a person to go into any voting station on voting day during national and provincial elections, to make a sworn statement to the effect that they are registered as a voter, they provide proof that they are registered, and that they find themselves outside of their station of registration, and therefore they wish to participate in an election. Once those things are set, are confirmed, the person would be entitled to vote. If they are still within the province in which they are registered, that voter would receive the national and provincial ballots. However, if they are outside the province in which they are registered, that voter would only be entitled to participate by way of the national ballot. Over time, this exception no longer facilitated the purpose and noble intention for which it was intended. It became a provision that facilitated for shopping of queues by political contestants. So you found that voters have been moved from their voting station and redirected to areas at which the perception is that there are shorter queues and there are no queues at that voting station. And that has a very deleterious impact on the perceptions of freeness and fairness of an election. And it also enables conspiracies to emerge that voters may have voted more times than they are entitled. What the bill does now is to restrict the availability of Section 24A at a voting station. So Section 24A remains, however, a person who wishes to vote by Section 24A must give prior notice to the chief electoral officer of their intention to vote on election day outside of their station of registration, and also indicate at which other station they will cast their ballot. It is intended to safeguard the electoral outcomes and also to avoid accusations that persons may have been able to vote more times than they are allowed to. Key to underscore, there is no corresponding provision of Section 24 capital A in municipal elections. So in municipal election, a person is still required to vote where they are registered, and their name will only appear in the voting district in which they are registered. So this explanation seeks to allay the fears of the submissions that perceived that persons may be able to be biased to influence outcomes of ward elections in areas in which they were not ordinarily resident, or in areas in which they have no business. The next category of submissions still relate to the very same clause, but these are the persons who have indicated their support for Section 24A because in their understanding, there's recognition that many citizens have experienced change in their circumstances due to financial reasons and employment opportunities, and persons may find themselves outside of their areas of ordinary residence on voting day, and that those persons should not forfeit their right to vote as long as they are safeguard their continued participation. The next category of submissions again arise out of a misreading of what the bill seeks to provide for. The bill seeks to make it easier for persons who are registered and intend to vote outside the Republic. For example, a person who is registered against the vote segment of the voters' roll in South Africa House in London, who intends to vote in South Africa House during national and provincial elections. What we're doing is that we're dropping the requirement that that person must inform the chief electoral officer of the intention to vote. Secondly, that that person should not be made to apply for a special vote. So we'll default those category of persons. If you are registered in South Africa House and you intend in national and provincial elections to vote in South Africa House, you no longer have to give your notice of your intention to vote in South Africa House. You do not also require to make an application for a special vote. This is to make it easier for those category of citizens to continue to participate overseas. We're also looking at seeing if we can accommodate in the election timetable a longer lead-up period for preparations for special votes abroad. The category that remains for people who still need to give notice of their intention to vote overseas is a voter who is registered in the Republic against a segment of the voter's roll in the Republic. I'm registered in Centurion, but however, I know that on voting day, I will be in London and therefore wish to vote in South Africa House. Those category of voters must give an indication of their intention to vote in South Africa House, but also apply for a special vote. Similarly, a person who's registered using our example in London, but knows that on voting day, they will be in France and they will vote at the South African embassy in Paris, they will need to give notice and apply for a special vote. So this is a misunderstanding and misreading by the submissions. We are trying to make special votes more accessible and much more easier for persons who are registered in a segment of an overseas voters' roll and who intend to vote at that segment, not to give notice and not to apply for special vote. The last category of submissions, Chair, are those of individuals who have either indicated support or objected to the bill without indicating specific provisions of the bill or advancing specific reasons for their objections or support. A review of those suggests that there are three broad categories. The first are those who seem to suggest or attack the bill on constitutional grounds. The second are those people who somehow read the bill to be introducing some form of electronic voting, and because of that, they think that there are undisclosed financial implications that arise out of the introductions of an electronic bill that we are understating in the memorandum that accompanies the bill. The response to this submissions is as follows, is that while the submissions provided scant details, responses are proffered from what we could discern as the substantive issues that the comments were raising. One, we want to make it clear that the bill has been certified for constitutional compliance by the state law advisor. Two, to clarify that the bill does not make any provision for, nor does it introduce any form of electronic voting. And for these reasons, there are no additional costs to the state arising from electronic voting. By way of summary and conclusion, Chair, there are two clauses in which we are proposing a redraft arising from submission as a result of the public participation process, and for which we ask leave of the committee for consideration and approval. The first is clause 8, and again there we indicated that we are reinstating section 16.2 to still make segments of the voter's roll available, but unlike in the past, this is no longer an unfettered access for every person to get a copy of the segment of the voter's roll, but these are only available for specific and predetermined purposes. We think that this strikes a balance between access to information and protection of personal information of voters. The second area in which we are proposing a redraft relates to section 15, again under clause 8. Here, the redraft makes it clear which digits of the ID number the CEO must redact. And again, here, we make it clear that this is a peremptory provision of the law. The reduction is a peremptory provision of the law. It is not a discretion held by the chief electoral officer. Lastly, we are proposing a redraft in section 47.7 of the Municipal Electoral Act to respond to the submission by the City of Cape Town Municipality to make it clear again there that we do not desire a discretion that is impermissible. We make it clear that we do not hold any discretion in the determination of a varied voting procedure. Those persons who vote by a varied procedure because they do not have voters' roll, they do not have addresses on the voters' roll, are still subject to the procedures set out in section 47. In other words, they must still be registered on the voters' roll, they must present at their voting station at which they are registered, they must present their ID documents, and then once they are validated, their names will be marked off the register, they will be marked with indelible ink. And in short, their voting, while it's slightly adjusted, it is still subject to the controls that Parliament has determined under section 47 as it currently stands. That concludes the responses from the Electoral Commission. Thank you for your indulgence, Chair.
Thank you very much, Deputy CEO, and also thank you for the additional clarity that you provide in terms of the presentation that you made. I'll now request Advocate Lakula from the Information Regulator if you have anything you would like to address the committee on. The platform is yours now.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
But before you
thank you very much.
Advocate, before you continue, Deputy CEO, can I request that you stop sharing the screen? Thank you. Matt, you may continue.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson of the Select Committee on Security and Justice, Honorable Sheikh, the Honorable Minister of Home Affairs, Dr. Aaron Motsoaledi, the Honourable Deputy Minister of Home Affairs, Ms. Nzuza, the Chairperson of the IEC, Mr. Glenn Mashinini, the Deputy Chair and Commissioners who are present, including the CEO and other senior officials of the IEC. Good morning to you and to the Honourable Members of the Committee. Chairperson, thank you for this opportunity. I am accompanied by one of the members of the Information Regulator, Ms. Alison Tilley. this is how we're going to proceed. I'm going to give just a brief background of how we reached the point that we are at. And then thereafter, I will hand over to Ms. Tilly to just give a brief explanation or reason why we are supporting the proposed amendments that have just been tabled by the Deputy Chief Electoral Officer of the IEC. Just for the sake of those who might not know who we are, because we are a new organization, the information regulator is established in terms of Section 39 of the Protection of Personal Information Act. I beg your pardon. It consists of the chairperson and four members who are appointed by the president on recommendation of the National Assembly. The members the regulator was established, or the members were appointed on the 1st of December 2016. We hold office for a renewable period of 5 years. We have a vast statutory powers. One of those powers, mandate, we have a, not powers, mandate, and one of our mandate is to provide advice upon request or on our own initiative to a minister, a public or private body, on their obligations under the Act, which we refer to in short as POPIA, and to monitor and enforce compliance by public and private bodies with the provisions of the Act. And in compliance with this mandate, in January 2020, we convened a colloquium with the IEC, and the purpose of that colloquium was to look at the provisions of the Electoral Act, the Electoral Commissions Act, and to ascertain whether those provisions, some provisions in those acts, are in line with the Protection of Personal Information Act. Yeah. Out of that colloquium, it was agreed that certain provisions of the Electoral Act have to be amended, in particular, Section 16.2 and 16.8, which Mr. Shiburi addressed you on. The reason for that is that the 16.2, as you know, originally provided that the voter's roll can be made available to any person upon payment of a fee. Now, the voter's roll contains a lot of personal information of voters. The personal information consists of name, surname, and an address, and an identity number, which in terms of our Act POPIA, is a unique identifier. It's a very sensitive personal information. Anyone who is in possession of any person's personal identity number is in possession of a very important aspect of personal information. So at that time, we advised the IEC to have a look at that provision. They then submitted, I think there was a bill that was submitted to the proposed bill to the national, to the portfolio committee on home affairs. And in that version, I think they had completely removed 16.2 of the Act, which was our first prize, because our first prize was please delete or remove Section 16.2, which they did. Then subsequent to that, there was then the process before the NCOP, and there were submissions that were called by the NCOP, resulting in the submission by Amabungani. And on the basis of that, the IEC had to reconsider their first amendment or proposed amendment to Section 2, to delete Section 2 or 16.2 altogether. And they then consulted us to get our view on it, because our mandate is to protect personal information and is to ensure that all private and public bodies that process personal information, they do so in compliance with the provisions of the Protection of Personal Information Act. So it is that consultation between us and the IEC that led us to where we are, to the proposed amendments that are before you today. And with that brief background and with your kind permission, Chairperson, I'm going to then hand over to my colleague, Ms. Tilly, to then explain why we are supporting the proposed amendments to Section 16.2 and 16.8. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, everybody. The regulator is supporting the IC's amendments because we agree that the voters' roll must in some part be made available to the public in order to ensure that that is available as one of many steps that are taken to ensure the integrity of the voters' roll. And as Advocate Shakuna has indicated, if the whole of the roll is made available, there is a significant quantity of personal information, which includes name and identity numbers and addresses. The amendments as proposed by the IEC, in our view, strike the right balance between access to information and privacy. We did, however, look at the proposals around Section 16.2b and 16.5b, where there was a new idea introduced around unreasonable disclosure of information. Now, that's a perfectly good idea, but just that for us, we would rather fall back on the provisions of POPI. So where it's possible, it would be preferable to refer POPI or to reference POPI so that we don't introduce new concepts or slightly different terminology and try and keep it as consistent as possible. So what we looked at there was to suggest that effectively, if personal information is made available through people accessing parts of the voter's roll, it must meet the requirements that there might be unlawful processing in terms of POPI. So POPI then creates the framework, and if you're going to get personal information, you then have to proceed on the basis that you are going to only do processing such that it's lawful in terms of POPI. So I think that was, yeah, that is our sense of that the access provisions and the processing provisions sitting together would mean that only the enough personal information is processed and not too much. So and as you know, that's the balancing act that the POPI tries to set up. Chair, if I could then return back to you. I think I've covered my submissions.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. Thank you, Ms. Tilly. And that's us, Chairperson, brief, and that's all that we have to say before this Honourable Committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Tilly and Ms. Chaput. It's very hard to chair a meeting when there are so many chairpersons inside of this meeting, but be that as it may, let me hand it over to Deputy Minister, Minister is with us. I know reference is made to the Deputy Minister. I'm not even sure he's on the platform, but the Minister, if you have anything that you would like to add and or address the committee on, the platform is yours, Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson of the Select Committee. Let me also greet the Chairperson of the Electoral Commission, Rema Shinini, and the Information Regulator, Advocate Lagula, as well as all the members of the Select Committee and the people attending this very important event. Chairperson, I only have one issue. While I understand the motivation we did in the National Assembly about Section 16.2 having to be removed,
It was specifically to protect personal information of individuals. And I think everybody will agree that none of you would like their personal information in the hands of wrong and unscrupulous people. But we are being called upon to balance between that and the access to information for the simple reason that I suspect there are suspicions that perhaps restricting or removing Section 16.2 is preparing a route to cheat and make people vote who are not supposed to. And I think there is that fear that the media and any other interested person who wants to evaluate election, who want to monitor rather elections, not evaluate, who wants to monitor, must have choose to do so. So we will accept the changes that are being made, but together with the restrictions, it is a balance, even though it's still worrisome. But there is a proposal that I want to make as a further amendment, especially of the second part of the amendment Mr. Shiburi mentioned. The first one was this issue of availability of voters' rolls. I've got nothing to add there. But the second one is to give it in a redacted fashion as far as the ID is concerned. I'm sure members here will appreciate the fact that we are custodians of the ID and we understand what the ID means. Your ID consists of 13 digits. And these digits are not just random digits. They are systematic digits. They've got a language. They are speaking a language. They give information. Now, if you want to see whether somebody is eligible for elections or not, you look for two things on the ID, if that is what you are interested in. And I think all the people, including Ambabungan, who made this presentation, are interested in that. Two things. Number one, in terms of age, is this person of voting age? Or are we just putting young kids to come and vote for whatever motive? Now, the first six digits will inform you about that. And that's why they can't be redacted, because it's very important part of the information. Is this person eligible to vote or not? So that's the first six digits. They can't be. So when you redact, you are making an exception. But now I'm making a proposal that also don't redact the last three digits, because that's the second thing that tells you whether a person is eligible to vote. The last three digits indicate whether you are a South African or not. They are different. You are aware that for a person who is a bona fide South African, it ends with 08 something, 081, 082, 083, up to 089. That is for South African. If you are a refugee resident in South Africa, you are aware that you have got all the rights that all South Africans have got, except a right to vote. That right in our constitution is not there for a refugee, but they've got all the other rights that me and you have. And their ID ends with 266. And so if you find on the voters' roll somebody with 266, you must be aware that there's a mistake. The third category I want to mention are people who are permanent residents in South Africa, who have got the South African ID, but still hold citizenship of another country, which means they too are not allowed to vote. Their ID ends with 188 or 189. 188 or 189. So those are also not allowed to vote. So if you go to a voter's roll, you find somebody with 188 or 189. It's a mistake. So for me, it's important that when you put exemptions on the reduction, on redacting, you put an exemption on the first six digits and on the last three digits. It gives you all the information you want. That's all I want to add. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Minister. And I think the issue that you're raising was also presented to us as a committee in the very first briefing that we received from the IEC on the amendments to the bill. And perhaps maybe if we continue to comment or ask questions, the IC should also maybe perhaps explain the difference in terms of the information that is being redacted and why the exclusion of the last three digits. That being said, honourable members, I thought it was important for us to get information from all sectors so that as we engage or as we make our comments and ask our questions, we fairly briefed on the issue at play. I'm going to open it.
Chairperson?
Minister?
I beg your pardon. I'm very, very, very sorry. I apologize profusely. I'm aware that I'm speaking here on a public platform and members of the, members of the public are listening, so I shouldn't be making mistakes. I made one small mistake that may confuse people who are now checking their IDs. I said a South African ID ends with 08 something. A refugee is 266. A permanent resident who is still a citizen of another country, I said it's 188 and 189. I want to correct that. It's 18 something. Can be something, but it ends with 18. Or it ends with 19 something, not 189. The mistake I made is 189. It's 18 something or 19 something. Whereas the South African is 08 something. That is the correction I want to make. I beg your pardon once more. I thought it's important to make that correction. Thank you.
Now, thank you very much, Minister. I think you're in order. Honourable members, are there any comments and or questions that you have in terms of the various presentations that we received? And seeing, can you please use the raise your hand function? I'm noting Honourable Nikolakis. There's Honourable Zipu, Honourable Bartlett.
Me chair as well, please.
Me chair. That's Honourable Silesu.
Thank you.
Not have to raise the hand function.
No, it doesn't okay. Work.
That's great. You noticed. Okay. Let me just take and then Honourable Mukosi. Okay. Let me take members in that order. We'll start with Honourable Nikolakis. I know that you put something in the chat as well, but please just. Please raise comments and or questions. Honourable
Nikolakis. Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, it's not every day that I agree with all the ministers, but I have to say I absolutely agree with the argument made by the Honourable Minister Motsoaledi about the meaning of all the different segments of an ID number. I put in the chat that even where the minister indicated that citizenship is the last three digits, your date of birth is the first six, the middle part, especially the seventh digit, indicates the gender of a person as well. So the whole ID number, like the minister said, is not just a bunch of random numbers. It actually gives information that is important to verify the identity of a person. Chairperson, my question is, there are already certain mechanisms built into this draft that protect people's information. The first one is that the voter's roll can only be given to people under certain circumstances. And if I'm correct, those people who receive the voter's roll will still be subject to the requirements of POPIA as well. So the political parties, for example, who receive this information for the purposes of the election, will still have to make sure that they do everything in their power to also protect the information in terms of POPIA. Those are two mechanisms that are built into all the requirements to make sure that people who receive the information don't just go about irresponsibly with it. My question would be, whether those two mechanisms, why aren't they enough to ensure that people's information is protected? Because, and I think the minister also pointed to this, we need to strike a balance where the last thing that we want is after an election, whoever wins an election, for people to go about with accusations saying that it wasn't free and fair because we couldn't verify who were voting and who voted once or who voted twice. That would cast aspersions onto the credibility of our whole democratic system. And I fear that if you restrict it too much, the ability to ensure that elections are verified as free and fair, then you're going to end up with a crisis on that end. My question would be, the two requirements that I mentioned are very restricting in terms of how political parties, for example, need to go about with the information that they receive. For what reason are those two requirements not enough that we have to go a further step to also reduce the information or the ID number that we have to then make available, since the information that you remove from that ID number, as the minister said, actually carry quite vital information for verifying the process. Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Mikolakis. Honourable Dodovo? Honourable Dodovo? Honourable Dodovo, are you with us? Your hand is raised and you are on the platform. Okay, let me take Honourable Barton.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Chair. Chair, I just want to raise a good morning to everybody, to the honourable members, and also to the members of the IEC. I just have a few questions, Chair. Because of in terms of the proposed amendment on page 1 in relation to section 16.2, can IEC please elaborate on what and how access to the voters' roll takes place, and further, what the prescribed fee refers to? I think the committee would benefit from a more detailed discussion of what exactly access to the voters' roll means to us. And number two, Chair, we are concerned about citizens informing and citizen information that's being abused. There should be very good reasons for accessing the information and penalties if information used for something else or wrong or for the wrong reasons, like fraudulent activities, sometimes the cloning of bank cards, the stealing of people's identity. How will you ensure that there's a strict application process? In terms of the penalties in the proposed amendment, a fine or month imprisonment is sufficient to deter the wrongful use of personal information of voters. That is very important to us, Chair. We just can get clarity on that. And in the last one, Chairperson, are the regulations going to be amended? What is the time frame for getting these regulations in place? Is the committee, please, the IEC, can explain that to us. And that will be very, very helpful. Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Bartlett. Honourable Tulefu.
Thank you very much, Chair and Honourable Members, Minister, and to the IEC. Chair, whenever I talk, I always make sure that we need to safeguard our democracy, and we must make sure that our elections are credible and they are free and fair. And my colleague, Mr. Honorable Mikolakis, has already covered me in terms of why it was decided that it should be the first six digits. And because I understand if you use 2A, and the political party comes to you and asks for a voter's roll with all the digits, and you will give based on the criteria, and this is the reasons why we want that particular voter's roll, and this is what we are going to do with this particular voter's roll. Should we not do what we said we are going to do, and then that provision in 2A actually says this is how we are going to deal with you. And I think, Chair, that provision actually says that's the information that we can be given in terms of the voter's role. And also, Chair, what is important is that I would love the IEC just to share with us Because when the chairperson was talking, he said that they engaged with Amabungane and they engaged with the regulator, you know, in terms of their submission. But I would like just to know that why Amabungane is not part of the meeting, because they engaged with both stakeholders, but only one stakeholder is here, which is the information regulator. And also, Chair, the second one is that, can they also share with us as the committee, how does or do other countries, you know, democratic countries or democratic governments protect, you know, information on the voter's role when it comes to the ID? Just to share with us, you know, how, when it comes to the protection of the ID numbers in other democratic countries, how do they actually do that? And Chair, and they talk about the chief electoral officer is satisfied, because we are giving the discretion to the chief electoral officer to say, I am going to give you what you have required, or I'm not going to give you. How are we going to save, how are we going to make sure that, you know, on that day when the chief, you know, electoral officer, bad day, you know, and just decides not to grant you the voter's roll, you know, there is space for you to appeal. Is there space for appeal? Should one organization or one party feel that justice has not been done, and the reason why the Rebosa role was refused there's no legitimate reasons why it was refused. Is there a room for appeal? Should they not be granted? And also, Chair, what is also lacking is in terms of the time frames. Should I put a request today for a voter's roll? Within how many days am I expected to get a favorable answer? And then if I don't get a favorable answer and I appeal, how many days can that appeal be heard and for me to get that particular answer? I think those are the ones, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Seleko. I think some of your questions, we'll deal with it. There's Honorable Mkosi, your hand was up, but I don't see it up anymore.
Mtetwa.
It's up, yeah. It's up.
It's up, okay. Honorable Mkosi? Honorable Mtetwa, you noticed.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair. Greetings to the Minister and his deputy and the officials of the IEC and the Information Regulator, my colleague, the members of the Portfolio Committee or of the Select Committee. Chairperson, I've got only two questions that I want to ask, but before that, I would love to welcome the presentation made by both the Minister and the officials. Chair, my first question is to say, what checks and balances will be put in place to ensure that constitutional right to privacy under Section 14 of the Constitution and the political rights protected in Section 19 of the Constitution? And my second question is that, how will the IEC and information regulator work together to ensure that the processes are constitutionally sound? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mkosi. Honorable Motsamai. Honorable Motsamai.
Kialeboga, Chairperson. Hello, Minister. Honorable question, say that how to get back to the boots. I'm a Tomon and get back to the boots over it. But to buy longer more, the vote to work right over the kiddo. Yes.
Some of what you're saying is not clear. Can I propose that you switch off the camera so that your connectivity is improved? Because we can't hear you clearly. Okay, please continue. I think we're having a problem with your connection because we don't hear you at all. I'm not sure if it's just myself, but I don't hear you at all. I think I see the chair of the IEC also nodding his head. So I take it that we cannot hear what you are saying.
So what is it?
We'll come back to you, Honorable Matamai. I think the next person was Honorable Dodo. Are you with us? Because I noticed you say you're having connectivity problems. If not, I'm going to take Honorable Mteto.
Thank you very much, Chair. Mine is that we want the department to take us into confidence around the issue of securing this information. Remember, this is a very damning information, or it's an information of all of us. People with the new gadget and all sorts of things, they were trying to do all sorts of fun things, even through location systems and that. Now that there is a data that also contains your detailed IDs and stuff, street address, we believe that it's more detailed. We don't dispute it. But can you take us into confidence that this citizen information can be really be protected in one way or other? Because now people, they can still scam you on this and that, but sometimes they can't get to this detail that we will be giving to the IEC. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kepa. Honorable Dodo, are you with us? No. Honorable Matavai? Maybe guys, Honorable Dadamela, are you with us and would you want to raise any questions?
Thanks, Chair. I think the colleagues covered me partly, but the most important thing that I wanted to raise is the issue, how safe is the information, as Honorable Mteto has also just alluded now. How safe is that information, the data of the voter? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable
Dananella.
And thank you, Honorable Members, for your comments and questions. I think from my side, I would perhaps just like to raise two issues. I think the one is in relation to the question asked by Honorable Bartlett in terms of clause 16.2 as it existed. What I would like to know from the IEC is that, do you have records of who has over the past election accessed the voter's roll and for what purposes? And are you aware of any abuse in terms of voter information? And secondly, I just want to make this comment that I think in the proposed amendments, the attempt by the IEC to find the balance between protection of personal information and access to information, I fully agree that information needs to be redacted. And while I believe that there are various checks and balances within the processes of the IEC, and it is obviously also in the interest of political parties and individual candidates that contest elections, that there's transparency and matters are handled, all matters handled by the IEC are actually above board. But I think when we deal with citizens' information, and in line with the POPI Act, we should move with caution. And I think we should also be very concerned when our citizens' information or our citizens become vulnerable if their personal information is used for wrong reasons. And in circumstances when they become victims of fraudulent activities, et cetera. Members, you remember that we also dealt as a committee with the cybercrime board, and I think at that point also we dealt with the POPI Act. And I think given the current environment that we also face with in terms of COVID-19, we are even more exposed to the cyberspace, and you have more and more people are migrating into the space. And I think initially I did say thanks for some of the clarity that you provided, but I still think perhaps the IEC needs to perhaps give us further clarity, especially in terms of Section 16.5, where you indicate that under exceptional circumstances, the full identity and number of a person can be disclosed. Can you elaborate more on how this process is going to be managed? I think the deputy CEO tried to do that, but I think you need to satisfy us to a large extent by how you're going to deal with that kind of information. What are the procedures around it? Because this is again a discretionary issue that gets given to the chief electoral officer. And then, I think those are my two issues that I wanted to raise. I'm going to then hand over to the chairperson of the IEC, of the commission, Commissioner Mashinin, if you can then take us through in terms of how you're going to deal with these responses.
Thanks. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I think I've got this, as indicated, the CEO and the deputy CEO are both here. Let me invite them to take us through the various questions that were raised. And then myself and the commissioners, we will then sweep if there are any issues that we might need any further clarity or that might be left out. With your permission, Madam Chair.
Just you for a second, because I see Honorable Watanai's hand is also raised. I thought before you go into, it would be important for you to get all the questions. Honorable Watanai, are you with us?
Yes, Chair. Chairperson, ne ke kopa botsa fela hore batho ba ileng hore ba bereka mo ile di observer mo di voting. A ke batho ba sebetsang permanent go bereka mo o gona le criteria e ile gore ka sebediswa go change batho bana mo ile gore because ha ba sebetsa mo ba tseba automatically which party is it in by choice or ke yone e tla winang di vote. E mo ne ke batlo e botsa ape gore Given tsela e leng gore e ka sebedisiwa mo bo matšhonisa gore ba seka re ga go iwa di-voting e be e le gore ba tshwere di-ID tsa bo makoko gobane bo makoko ba bangata ga ba kgone go vota ka tamaya gore ba file bo matšhonisa di-card. Ke a leboga.
Thank you, Honorable Matsumai. I think I fairly understood your questions, but I take it the chair of the commission has also noted the question. I think the first one you raised around the observers being permanent workers, I know the act is not, the amendment bill is not dealing with that now, so that's maybe the IEC could talk to you. Thank you, chairperson of the commission.
Yeah. Yes, thanks, Madam Chair. Can I then invite the CEO and the Deputy CEO to take us through the various questions? Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson, and greetings to all members of the committee and the commissioners and the information regulator. Chair, the first question, if I understood it well, suggests that the new section 16.5 that relates to the reduction of certain digits from the ID number is unnecessary given the protections already available under 16.3 and 16.2. Now, in terms of section 10 of POPIA, to which we are all bound, there has to be, there are certain principles that are outlined in POPIA which provide for the lawful processing of personal information. And one of those principles is the minimality. Now, what minimality means is if you are processing personal information, you need to provide that which is squarely sufficient for purposes for which is intended. Now, for purposes of the voter's roll, personal information is required to check whether the person is entitled to vote. So you need the first six digits. You also need to know whether the person is a South African citizen. You also need to check whether they are registered in the correct segment of the voter's roll. You don't need any other thing beyond that for purposes of verifying the correctness of the vote. So what Section 16.5 is doing is balancing the need to disclose personal information having been processed on the one hand, but also staying true to the principles that have been outlined in BAIA, one of which being minimality. But Section 16.5 also has an exception. There may be instances where in the same voting district, there are persons with similar names who are born on the same day. In those exceptional circumstances, there may be need to fully disclose the ID, the full ID number, but it's an exception. And that exception is towards full disclosure, depending on the circumstances. So that's the answer to the first question. Now, the question that Honorable Bartlett puts, the current Section 16.2 provides that any person on a payment of a prescribed fee is entitled an extract of a certified copy of a voter's roll. That's really what the section provides. In other words, any person can come fill in a form and on payment of a fee, which I'll discuss shortly, say I need an extract from the certified copy from a certified voter's roll for this ward, for this VD, or for this municipality, and so on. And the chief electoral officer will then have to provide that copy.
in line with the payments that have been made. Now, if the request pertained to a physical hard copy, the charges that are the prescribed fees are levied in terms of the regulations on the registration of voters. And for a physical copy is 1 rand per page. And for an electronic copy, the charges are 2,500 for the national copy, 300 for the provincial copy, 250 for a metropolitan copy, and 200 rands for a municipal segment. So on payment of those fees and on application, any person can get a copy. What we are proposing in terms of the new reformulation, the new formulation, is to circumscribe Section 16.2 and circumscribe it in terms of users. What that means is that you've got to indicate the purpose for which you need the voter's roll for. And the proposition outlines three things. It has to be for monitoring the accuracy of the information on the voter's roll, for statistical or research purposes, or for any other purpose that is prescribed, which means a purpose for which Parliament can prescribe either in a law or in a regulation. And lastly, that doing so would not involve the unlawful processing of personal information in terms of POPIA. In other words, doing so will not fall foul of the principles that are outlined in POPIA for the processing of personal information. So the reformulated 16.2 balances the protection of personal information, which is a right which is inherent in the right to privacy as outlined in the Constitution on the one hand, and transparency and the free flow of information on the other. But because the IEC would have to assess the applications that are made in terms of 16.2 based on what is before them at the point of application, and assuming the applicant's bona fides, we are not guaranteed that once the that copy is approved and availed to the person, it won't be used nefariously. We can't sit here and say with a measure of certainty that once it's approved and provided, it will in all cases be used for the intentions for which the Act provides. We're making a penal provision, in terms of the new section 2A. And that penal provision is anyone using the certified extract of the voter's roll obtained in terms of the new section, subsection 2, is guilty of an offense and liable on conviction to a fine or imprisonment for a period not exceeding 1 year or both. So this is important because we cannot guarantee that in 100% of the cases there would not result incorrect use of the information provided. Chair, if I go to the questions that Honorable Seleku placed on the table, around the issue of appeal of the decisions of the Chief Electoral Officer, the general philosophy behind the compilation of the voters' roll and processes related to that is as follows. The Chief Electoral Officer is charged with the compilation of the voters' roll, which includes the fact that people are registered in the correct ward segments, they have an address, and so on and so on and so on and so on, which is why in the totality of Section 16, Parliament has given the CEO the responsibility for processing the applications that are received for access to the voters' roll. It's in line with the scheme which grants the CEO the responsibility in the Electoral Act. Now, where in terms of objections to people being on the voters' roll, in terms of Section 15 as an example, where a person is aggrieved by the actions of or the decision of the Chief Electoral Officer, such a person can appeal or raise an objection rather to the commission. Because the commission is not involved in the compilation of the voters' roll and is not involved in processing the applications for requests to voters. Those are handled at the level of the CEO. But should anyone be aggrieved, the next authority that can look at that is the commission. Whether the committee feels it's desirable then to explicitly state that in some way in Section 16, it's a matter that I think we can leave in the hands of the committee. But in terms of the general scheme, decisions of the Chief Electoral Officer vis-a-vis the voters' roll, you can raise objections to the commission. The issue of time frames, this I think is a matter that we're going to have to tread a little bit carefully, because it really depends where in the electoral process you are. If this request is given a day before there's a general registration of voters, or if this request in terms of Section 2, the application is made a few hours before an election is made, your response time there in those circumstances would not be the same. So if the committee is minded to regulating the time frame, I think awareness of the different phases of the electoral process is going to be important. It's best to provide a broad a framework and ensure that there's no unreasonable delays on the part of those that are charged with this responsibility. But a hard and fast timeline might just prove to be counterproductive, because it may work faster if we don't have a major election event on the horizon, and it may be slightly difficult when it's very close to a major electoral event. So you need to have a broad time frame
coupled with an injunction not to unreasonably delay the provision of the, if the application is successful. Now, Honorable Ngozi, I think the current formulation of Section 16.2 and 2A, 2 capital A, it's a delicate balancing act, or is a result of a delicate balancing act. The two competing rights are very difficult, really, to balance, because our number one proposition would have been to repeal, as we had in the initial iteration of the bill. But we now realize that life is not that simple in a constitutional democracy. Rights are competing. But we believe that the current formulation provides for relatively enough measures to secure the unnecessary disclosure of personal information on the one hand, as well as guaranteeing the political rights of voters and the need to have a free flow of information, as well as abide by the constitutional imperative for transparency in all spheres of state business. So we really think that the proposal as we have it has tried to balance those competing rights. It is not an easy exercise, it's very difficult and so on, but we think that at least the proposition that is on the table tries to get us to a constitutionally compliant dispensation. I think that's really the point, that what is we are putting before the committee, we believe it to be constitutionally compliant. Then I'll deal with the questions that Ntsamai was raising. He made use of the word observers, but I think the context of the question appears to mean the voting station staff. Are they permanently employed, and couldn't they be changed? Although this matter is outside of the subject matter of the bill, but the short answer is as follows. Persons working within voting station as voting station officials are not permanently employed. Each time ahead of a major electoral event in the country, they are recruited anew. The basis of the recruitment is an agreed recruitment and selection criteria, which has been discussed with the National Party Liaison Committee. Once recruited, the list of the officials to be appointed, prospective officials, is provided to municipal party liaison committees. And if there's anyone who any party believes is not compliant to the criteria, an objection can be raised, and that objection can then be considered by the commission. Now, the issue around securing of information is a very important one, given what is happening throughout the world and indeed within the country. And if one answers that question from the point of view of cyber security, because this data is stored in an electronic format by the Commission. Of course, we have taken measures to safeguard our IT networks. And we are using monitoring tools on our system to detect any undesirable infiltration of the system to ensure that our network is not breached, and in so doing, the personal information of voters taken away and used nefariously. But this area of our work is a never-ending business, because there are new methods that people with nefarious intentions are coming up on almost on a daily basis, and it's a continuous process of improving the security of the network. But we are, as the Commission, working always to be in line with modern security protocols that are applied in industry. Then the past records, the issue that the chairperson is raised, and the number of applications. Over the last 5 years or so, there has not been an avalanche of applications in terms of 16-2. Indeed, ahead of last year's elections, or sorry, 2019 elections, there has been one application, and which the Commission was able to discuss and an arrangement made with the applicant. In that circumstance, an arrangement was made that the personal details of voters were not disclosed. But with the provision of Section 16.2 as it currently stands, if the applicant was unreasonable, they could have went to the judiciary to vindicate their right of access. In that instance, fortunately, we were able to find a mutual accommodation. Are we aware of the abuses? We've received complaints with the manner in which political parties sometimes have used the some details from the voters' rolls by enriching that data with other data that we had not necessarily provided, such as cell phone numbers, and then sending people SMSs and cold calling people and so on. So there are other enrichment processes that the political parties utilize, which then, and then based on that, they make campaign messages to people. Some people find that to be unwanted, and complaints are received. So I think I've dealt with a majority of the questions, and there may be one or two that the Deputy CEO might want to clarify in conclusion, but the bulk have been addressed.
Deputy CEO.
Thanks, Chair, and thanks, CEO. Just to underscore that we understand the role of the Electoral Commission to be that we are under obligation to process personal information of voters in a manner that advances the principles in POPIA. And for that reasons, we must always strive for a balance between minimality as long as it enhances the prescribed disclosure for which that information is sought. And the last point to be made is that even where we redact information on the voter's roll, for purposes of election day, the voter's roll that we place at the voting station will have the full particulars of voters. So the voter's roll will have the full identity number of voters at the level of a voting station. The last point to be made, I think, CEO, there was a comment by the minister that we could make additional information available. Our approach has been that we accept that the base database is the National Population Register. So on our part, before we enter a person on a segment of a voter's roll, we run validation to check if the person is a citizen, they've attained the age of majority, and they qualify to enjoy political right. On that basis, we place them on the segment of the voter's roll. We are not averse to considering disclosing more digits, but we were happy with the six because we do not make the determination of citizenship, gender, and those other things. Those validations are already made before we enter the person's name and details on the segment of the voter's roll. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner. Are you done?
I just wanted to check if there was any other input from my fellow commissioners who are also participating in this. I just wanted to check from any one of them. If there is, I can see there's a Commissioner Mapier.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson and honorable members, Commissioner Miepa is the chair of our EMC, which is our Electoral Management Committee, through which all electoral matters have to be processed at the commission level. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me also align myself with the protocol and thank the Minister, the Information Regulator, honourable members and you, Chairperson of the session. I think there are a number of issues, but let me start with the last one that the Deputy Chief Electoral Officer sought to address. It was in relation to the proposal by the Minister to consider. The proposal that dealt with perhaps considering more, you know, the first six and the last three. And there was a suggestion that maybe the seventh digit, which is, you know, deals with the gender. I think the thought that we have to seriously consider is that when that information is provided, it is not an issue for the IEC to determine whether someone is a citizen or not, whether they are alive or not, and so on and so forth. And I think those are matters that are vested with the Department of Home Affairs, and we just need to reflect that. It may look good, but it may raise issues that are not necessarily issues that can be resolved by the Electoral Commission. In other words, these are matters that must be resolved elsewhere. And to the extent that they are not matters within the authority of the Electoral Commission, how does that then affect the information that we at the Electoral Commission have in fact harvested from voters? And I think we need to reflect on that a little bit. The question raised with respect to measures around the voter's role arise at a number of layers. At the level where the Electoral Commission goes out to register voters, we take exceptional measures to ensure that that information is safeguarded. When, for example, a voter's information is scanned on a scanner at the voting, at the registration station, that information is encrypted. Even if we should lose that equipment, it'll never be used because it is, you need decryption and encryption software. The same applies in its processing, in its storage, amongst other things. And there are other layers of security that, you know, because it's security, it's not a matter that one can freely talk about. But the point one needs to make is that at that level of safeguarding a person's information, we have never had a breach of that information. Touch wood, this is a situation we monitor, we review regularly, and ahead of every general election, this institution goes to on a public tender to get a qualified IT audit auditor, you know, and it's often one of the big audit firms that have the skill. They will then look at the security that we have. The Auditor General will do that. And we are satisfied that those are measures that we take to safeguard the information of voters on the voters' roll. There was an issue raised, and the COO was thinking aloud and making a proposal in respect to the question asked by the Honorable Member, Mr. Sileku, on how long a request must take, when the CEO processes, and what the appeals process must be to an objection or that appeal. I think when one looks at the scheme of the Electoral Act, any objection to the voter's roll is adequately dealt with in Section 15, which is not a subject of any amendment. Whether a voter is correctly registered, you know, whether they should be on the voter's roll or they shouldn't be, and so on and so forth. And that process defines the period, because it anticipates that such an objection will in fact locate the objection within a given time frame in the election timetable. And it requires that the CEO act immediately, that whenever a person who has objected is not satisfied with that response of the CEO, then they can appeal to the commission, and the commission must decide that appeal within 14 days. And once that appeal has been decided by the commission within 14 days, it must, if the commission has overturned the decision of the CEO, for example, the CEO must then implement that decision of the commission within 3 days. That provision, I submit, is adequate to deal with issues concerning an appeal or issues that may arise as a consequence of someone looking into the voter's roll. The last issue I wanted to raise, Chairperson, was in relation to the voter's roll remaining open at any point for any person who wants to get that information. The challenge, I suspect, is that this perhaps give an impression that you only raise them prior to an election or during an election. But in truth, and even when we go to an election, when we do a voter registration exercise and a campaign, we do point out that persons must check their details on the roll, that those that want to object or correct the voter's roll must do so, because at the point where the voter's roll has been certified, that voter's roll by law is now a voter's roll that must be used for that election. It's really like fixing a plane midair. Once it has taken off, it is gone, and an election must be held. That is important a consideration, because an election is sensitively tied to an election time frame that is tied to a constitutional imperative. And I thought I should just clarify that. I thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just checking if there isn't any other colleague. I don't hear one. If not, yes, Vice Chair.
Nothing from my side, Chair. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you. Madam Chair, perhaps I will try to sweep with finalizing one or two questions that came up. And one of those, I think, was the question raised by Honorable Sileko. And this was the question, why only one stakeholder is present here? Meaning, why do we have the information regulator and not the...
Commissioner, I think I'll address that matter, because the information regulator is here on our invitation. The invitation by the IEC. And perhaps there is a misunderstanding by the member, because I think you must understand, or members must also understand, the context of the information regulator. That they are an independent statutory body, and they establish in terms of Section 39 of the Protection of Personal Information Act. And I think the Chairperson, Advocate Lakula, has also tried to explain this matter, but also that the regulator is accountable to the National Assembly. Membership should take note of that. They're not just a stakeholder that is making submissions into this process, and their presence here was more to enrich the understanding of members as we further deliberate on the amendments to this bill. So, yeah, let me then just hand it back to you, Chair, Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair. And the other question then that also arose from Honorable Sileku was the issue as to whether is there any comparative analysis in terms of the practices regarding the issue of the IDs. Honorable members, what I wish to submit is that information will not be necessarily relevant in our situation, because the landscape varies so much throughout the world. In some countries, the issue of IDs and all of that is never actually even considered. A person just walks in and say, I'm so and so, and then they're given a ballot and they proceed. In other countries, they don't have IDs. In the environment, for example, most of the continent has got a big challenge in as far as this issue. People are just given a voting card or voting ticket. Now, we were able, from the inception in South Africa, because of the existence of the population register, that South African, the compilation of the voters' roll in South Africa was made drawing the data from the registered voters and checking it, as my colleague was pointing out, checking it against the population register. So most of the countries in the continent don't even have a population register. So the basis of verifying that this person is who they say they are is even more difficult, because they're relying only on a voter's ID, and those things are easy, that they could be fraudulently produced. So we as a country are fortunate in the sense that our voter's role is underpinned by an impeccable data, which is with the Home Affairs. And it was the reason and the basis why in the 98-99 establishment of the voter's role, the issue of using which ID came up in the country, where we had to use either the barcode ID, the green IDs, or so on and so forth, because that was the only national population register or database that could be relied upon, even if there were more than 9 IDs in the country. And then there was also another question that was raised by Honorable Mutamai. This was with respect to the issue of the loan sharks, Boma Shonisa. In this case, Honorable Member, the Honorable Member was actually saying there is a problem where during elections, there are members of the public who go to the loan sharks, and for them to receive the financial loans, they then have to surrender their IDs. And this issue, although it's not part of the presentation that with the amendment, but we would like to just acknowledge that yes, there is that particular problem, and that is illegal. And it's a matter that then between the commission and the political parties, there are constant activities to try to see how those situations can be averted. But similarly, we also work with the security cluster, and these things are then possible for us to get them reported so that the actions can be undertaken to deal with them from a criminal point of view. And lastly, I just want to reiterate and assure everybody that the Electoral Commission has no guarantee about how the information that it provides legitimately to those who meet the requirement that actually it would be something that is used lawfully. But the mechanisms that we have discussed today are actually measures that, from a technical point of view, we believe they approximate the optimum measures we could put together as a country to balance the two imperatives. One, for us being in a position to comply with POPIA. On the other side, to comply with our constitution, that is, there must be transparency in terms of activities that are undertaken by the commission. And so we submit, therefore, Madam Chair, that from where we are sitting, we really believe that this exercise has optimally unpacked and examined the issues that were then submitted to the August House, and we've applied ourselves to the best of our ability, and we recommend the NCOP and this select committee looks at our submission favorably. I thank you, Honorable Members, and thank you for the input, for the platform, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson of the Commission, the other commissioners, the CEO and the Deputy CEO for your responses. I'll maybe just check with Honourable Members, do you have any follow-up questions or areas that you require further clarity on? If you can perhaps give an indication by raising your hand. I know, Honourable Mutesa, your hand is still up from the previous process, and I'm not sure if you have a follow-up issue or not.
Honorable Chair, with your indulgence, and I'm extremely sorry for interrupting. With your indulgence, can I take the floor to respond to some of the questions, if you so permit?
Okay, you may, Mr. Fuller. And all members, if you have any, if you would please raise your hand using the raise your hand function.
Thank you very much, Chair, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I agree with the presentation by the Electoral Commission, not because they are my former colleagues, I have to put that on record. I agree with them because they have seriously put the protection of personal information at the heart of the work that they are doing, and they've actually informed themselves about COPIA, which is what all of us have to do. In response, direct response to Honorable Sileku regarding a benchmark against other countries, while I agree with what the chairperson of the IEC has said, the fact of the matter is that the issue of data protection or protection of personal information is a new issue. And in fact, data has become so valuable monetarily that some people actually even refer to it as the new oil. So everyone is now ensuring that they have to put in place mechanisms to protect the data that they collect. And in direct response to Honorable Sileku, if you look at Ecuador, and we looked at how other countries deal with this matter, Ecuador, they do the reduction as well as the way that it is proposed in our country, in this thing. If you look at the UK, actually, in the UK, the voter's roll is only made available for specific purposes stated in the law. And if you refer to their law, they make the voters list only to statutory bodies, actually, not anyone else. Australia is another country that we looked at. Australia is different because registering and voting is compulsory in terms of the law. But their law actually has a similar provision to the one that is being recommended. They say that the roll can be given for any purpose in connection with an election or referendum, for monitoring the accuracy of information contained in the roll, or for any other purpose that is prescribed. So what we are doing here is what organizations throughout the world are also doing. I also want to say to the IEC that because it is a public body, they are also obliged to comply with all the requirements of the protection of personal information. They must be alert. One of those requirements is that anyone who protects personal information must ensure that they put reasonable technical and organizational measures to protect the integrity and the confidentiality of the information against, among others, unlawful access. Now, cyber criminals are very busy. Many organizations have been breached, together with those that have very secure, or the ones that think that they have very secure systems. They have been breached. It's the reality. So what we are saying to the IC is that they really have to remain alert and ensure that their security measures, you know, are intact. That's the reason that the caution that I want to give to the IC. Otherwise, or the other question is, how do we work with the IEC? How will the IC work with the information regulator? We work together. The fact that we have come to this point is evidence of the cooperation between the two organizations. The fact that we raised the issue of compliance of the Electoral Act with the protection of personal information is an issue that preoccupied us from 2019, actually, not only in relation to the use of the voters' roll and protection of personal information in the voters' roll, but also the protection of personal information by political parties. Because political parties also have to ensure that they protect personal information of voters when they use it for campaigning purposes. So it's something that we have worked, we have consulted with the IEC, we've consulted with political parties, and this is just in our attempt to ensure that everyone complies with this new provision of the law. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Advocate Kasula. Our members, once again, are there any questions or clarity that you or follow-up question or any other matter of clarity that you want to raise? Please give an indication if you are happy with what has been presented. I think that is fine. Honourable Minister, I noticed you unmuted. I don't know if you are ready to say something. I will allow you.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. I don't want to belabor the proposal as made here, but when the Deputy Electoral Commissioner, the Deputy CEO of the Electoral Commission, Mr. Shibori, spoke, he referred to the submission as made on the reduction, reducting and exempting the first six numbers. The fact that I've added that the last three numbers showing your nationality must also be reflected. I did that because I still believe it's important. It's an identification of who is eligible to vote. I understand Mr. Muel just saying that is the job of Home Affairs to give us information so that to put it on the voters' roll and believe it's correct. Chairperson, remember, I'm in charge of both Home Affairs and IEC. And for that reason, I want seamless flow of information. What I've proposed is just to add another firewall to secure integrity of the voters' roll. To me, it's extremely important. I don't want to sit here and assume that systems in Home Affairs are so tight that nothing can change. I'm sure you are aware that as we're speaking, I've put in the public arena a proposal on new identification, the new identity management system in the country. It is out for public participation. And in it, one of the proposals we are making is to move from the biometric system we are using for security reasons from HANIS, which is Home Affairs National Information System. That's where your ID, your biometrics are stored for your ID on the National Population Register. It only provides for a fingerprint and a photo. And we have realized that that's never enough for security, especially in the cyber world, which Advocate Etlagula has referred to. We are moving to a new system called ABIS, Automated Biometric Information System, where we are even adding your iris recognition to recognize you through the iris in your eye, and also facial recognition to recognize you through your face. All those are firewalls that are added for integrity of identity. And so when I'm saying the last three numbers must be added, I'm adding the last firewall to identify that this is the real person who's eligible to vote. I don't want to assume that anything that is a pipeline from the National Population Register or from Home Affairs is perfect. It might not do because we are living in a world of corruption and cybersecurity issues. So I'm really appealing, unless what I said will cause a big problem in terms of information security. If it doesn't, it's a very important firewall for me, for the integrity of the vote as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Minister. I don't know if you want to maybe respond to that from the side of the IEC, but I just think that in terms of this matter, obviously the decision does lie with the Select Committee at the end of the day. The issues that were raised by the Minister was around the being an eligible voter, what are the issues that get looked at? And the inclusion of the last three numbers, like I said, the committee would consider that. But I don't know if the IEC wants to make a comment on that before. Chairperson, Commissioner?
Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Chair. Let me just check and see here that my colleague wants to make a comment, Commissioner Love.
Chair, I thought that the CEO did cover that in the sense of saying that from our point of view, if that's something that the committee is minded to do, there isn't a problem from our side. So I think it's just that that formulation will need to be finalized by the committee.
Okay. I think that does clarify the matter. Thank you, Deputy Chair of the Commission. Honourable members, if there are no other hands for clarity or follow-up questions, I take it that you are satisfied with the discussion that has taken place, as well as all the clarity that has been provided. And I understand the difficulties when we try to balance competing rights. But I think broadly, but I think before I go into matters, we're currently looking at amendments to Clause 8 in terms of Section 16, Subclause 2 and 16 to A, the addition of 16 to A, as well as Section 65 and Clause 20. Which I think nobody has really raised an issue with because it's linked to the style of drafting, so that there is no problem around that. But with clause section 16.5 in clause 8, which is in terms of the redaction of the ID number, like I said earlier, I think what the minister has raised makes a lot of sense, and I think we can look into a rewording of the proposed amendment to include the last three digits. I'm going to ask the parliamentary legal advisor, Suan Isaac, if you have any input or comments on the proposed amendments to the bill.
Suan? Thank you, Chairperson. I think the issues were covered quite in depth. The main issue is clause section 16.2 as to how we find the correct balance between the right to access to information and to protect personal information. And we've noted the comments and the concerns of the committee, and the issue with regard to the copy legislation is to ensure that whatever information is given is necessary for the purpose of related to the election process, so that whoever gets the information is using it to verify details and for no other purposes. So we take a note of the fact that with regard to the date of birth and the issue of the citizenship, and we would, with the mandate of the committee, just consider those issues as to how best to serve both the right to access to information and protect the personal information.
Thank you, Suan. Okay, and from the Office of the State Law Advisor. Okay.
Morning, everyone. I agree with Suan and her comments and exactly what she said when it came to Clause 16.2. Suan and I, based on direction given to us by the committee, will work together with the IEC to draft an apt provision for this, or redraft, and incorporate whatever sentiments that the committee approves today. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Just a comment,
Who am I? Who's speaking?
IEC, Chair.
I see Honourable before Commissioner. Honourable Nicola, is your hand up?
Yes, Chair. I just have a quick comment, if you would permit me.
Sure.
Thank you, Chair. My question is just, I think there's broad agreement on the disclosure of the first six figures, as well as the last three, from what I've just heard now. And it's this rhetorical question that I'm asking, is what is in the remaining four figures in your ID number that contains such important information that that can't also be disclosed. We're making this whole difficult thing about formulating a specific section of a bill to not disclose the four least significant figures of your ID number. We might as well just disclose the whole ID number because it contains such important information. That four figures in the middle are actually the four that contain the least important information. If you disclose the first six and you disclose the last three, then you're actually disclosing the most important personal information of a person. And the rhetorical question I'm just asking is, why then put yourself through the whole thing of formulating a very, very complicated section instead of just putting in regulations to make sure that the information that gets disclosed is used for the purpose that it is, instead of making it difficult for ourselves? That's just the question I'm asking myself. Thanks.
Yeah, Aron Mikhailovich, I think you're taking us back because for all intents and purposes, our entire discussion was around competing rights in terms of the access to information and trying to protect personal information. And the issue of rejecting the ID was to deal with the protection and to try and strike the balance between these competing rights. And that's why I'm saying you're going to be taking us back, but I'm going to probably allow the commission to briefly respond. And I'll also allow the information regulator to briefly respond. But please keep the briefing
Chairperson, I'm sorry.
Yes, Minister.
I'm sorry, Chairperson. Yeah, the right people to respond is the Department of Home Affairs, not the commission or
okay.
or the information regulator, if you allow me. Yes, I'm doing it, Chairperson, also for the purpose that the honorable member is a leader of the public. He needs to educate them. And this is important to me. Digit number 7, we never mentioned it because there's no relevance to gender in terms of eligibility to vote. That's why we left it altogether. The digits which he said are less important is not true. They are the most important ever to identify a person. The first six numbers, there are many South Africans which share that those numbers. Somebody here said people who were born exactly on the same date of birth, and they share the names and all that. They share everything. And the first six numbers they share. The last three numbers are also shared by a lot of South Africans because it's nationality. If you regard that, there are 57 million South Africans. They share the last three numbers. The issue that identifies exactly who you are is the middle digit, which you say are less important. They will never be the same for any one individual. Even for identical twins, they will never, ever be the same. And those are the ones who choose that this is George. Excuse me, I don't want to mispronounce your name. Makakis, yes. Those are the numbers that show this is you. Not your twin, not your brother, not your namesake, not your what. And so that's why when you redact them, nobody will actually put a finger and say, this is Shahida or this is Aron Mutwale. So I think I'm giving him that education for him to remain comfortable that we are not leaving the least important. They are the most important, actually, in identification of a human being in South Africa. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Minister Mutwale. Our members, I think we've okay, I think Honourable Mikhailovich, your hands were up.
Yes. No, I just want to thank the Minister for the education. It's really valuable. And I think in the light of the importance that the Minister has underlined now of those middle digits to be able to verify the identity of a person, I actually think that it's important that we disclose all 13 the figures. But I am really very much grateful to the Minister for clarifying that.
Okay, thank you very much, Honourable Mikhailovich. So I remember that I think broadly, in terms of our discussions, I think concerns in terms of access to information and the protection of personal information are fairly well contained in the proposed amendment. I think also the issue of constitutional compliance is also a critical matter in this case. What we'll do going forward, honourable members, is that we'll get the parliamentary legal advisor and the Office of the State Law Advisor then to liaise in terms of further refining clause 16 subsection 5 in terms of the ID number. And we will then in our next meeting consider our recommendations that we will make in terms of the call. I think having said that, honourable members, thank you very much for your participation. I thank the IEC, the information regulator, and the minister for the information that you shared with us, as well as the clarity that you provided to this meeting. And honourable members, thank you as well for your participation in this meeting. Thank you very much, and I'm declaring this meeting closed.
Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, colleagues. Thank you very much, and goodbye.
Thank you.
Bye, Minister.
Thank you so much. Bye.